that you travel with my computer, it's not so spontaneous. I'm reading around the first part of the two-part text I wrote, which had to do with the distinction between artistic intentions and the intentions of art historians. I begin with a quote from the art historian Michael Baxendahl. Intention is the forward-leaning look of things. It is not a reconstituted historical state of mind, then, but a relation between the object and its circumstances. When art historians, even the best of them, write about intention, there seems to be a presumption that you have two things, the work of art and the artist's intentions. As an artist, I find this, perhaps more than any other single thing, the major division now between how artists understand their work and how art historians see them. While the primacy of the object has long been questioned by artists, it remains the basis for much of the art's historical enterprise. This difference in the two disciplines, I feel, has been brought into focus by the issues raised by the context of art with which my own work has been long associated, conceptual art. Paradoxically, it is some recent writing on this movement which has now brought art historical writing into a crisis of meaning of its own. Conceptual art, simply put, had as its basic tenet an understanding that artists work with meaning, not with shapes, colors, or materials. Anything can be employed by the artist to set the work into play, including shapes, colors, and materials. But the form of presentation itself has no value independent of its role as a vehicle for the idea of the work. Thus, when you are approaching the work, you are approaching the idea, and therefore the intention, of the artist directly. The idea, of course, can be a force that is as contingent as it is complex. And when I have said that anything can be used by or as a work of art, I mean just that. A play within the signifying process conceptually cannot be limited by the traditional constraints of morphology, media, or objecthood. As a concrete and early example, I would cite my own work from 1965, the Proto Investigations, of which works such as One in Three Chairs would be a representative example. This work, using deadpan scientific-style photographs, which were always taken by others, employed also common objects and enlarged text from dictionary definitions. The physical elements were never signed, with the concept of the work being that this form of presentation would be made and remade. The reason for this was that was an important part of my intention. Eliminate the aura of traditional art and force another basis for this activity to be approached as art, that is, conceptually. Ownership of the work has been established by the production instructions which second as a certificate. It is signed, but as a deed of ownership, not as a work of art. Thus, I've made it clear that these certificates are never to be exhibited, since they are not art, and they rarely are. The art itself, which is neither the props with which the idea is communicated, nor the signed certificate, is only the idea in and of the work. As it was for other artists at that time, the issues of modernism were rapidly becoming opaque. One effect of this work was to summit modernism for me, and once that was visible, I was able to use that view to get past it, as the work which followed shows. Thus, for me, this work was both a summation of modernism and the way out of it. Art can manifest itself in all of the ways in which human intention can manifest itself. The task for artists is to put into play works of art unfettered by the limited kinds of meanings which objects permit, and succeed in having them become not the autonomous text of structuralism, but the production of artists as authors within a discourse, when concretized through subjective commitment and comprised of the making process. It is the historically defined agency of the artist working within a practice that sees itself as such a process, that an artist's work becomes believable as art within society. To do that, work must satisfy deeper structures of our culture than that surface which reads in the market as tradition and continuity. Can I get some milk for more coffee? It's good to have these things, actually. The more enriched our understanding of that text of art becomes, so does our understanding of culture. A focus on meaning, by necessity, has focused our concerns on a variety of issues around language and context. These issues pertain to reception and production of works of art themselves. An aspect of the questioning process, some now call institutional critique, began here also, and it originated with conceptual art's earliest works. A case in point to cite would be my use of tautology in the 1960s. Its use in the Pearl investigations has generated a variety of confused responses. One aspect of this work was the attempt to actualize a Wittgensteinian insight. By drawing out the relation of art to language, could one begin the production of a cultural language whose very function it was to show rather than say? Such artworks might function in a way which circumvents significantly much of what limits language. Art, some have argued, describes reality. But unlike language, artworks can also be argued simultaneously describe how they describe it. Granted, art can be seen here as self-referential, but importantly, not meaninglessly self-referential. What art shows in such a manifestation is indeed how it functions. This is revealed in works which feign to say, but do so as an art proposition and reveal the difference while showing their similarity with language. This was, of course, the role of language in my work beginning in 1965. It seemed to me that if language itself could be used to function as an artwork, then that difference would bear the device of art's language game. An artwork, then, as such a double mask, provided the possibility of not just a reflection on itself, but an indirect double reflection on the nature of language through art to culture itself. Do not forget, writes Wittgenstein, that a poem, even though it's composed in the language of information, is not used in the language game of giving information. Whatever insights this early work of mine had to share, it did, and it initiated within the practice an essential questioning process, which is now basic to it. It should be obvious that the bearing of the device of the institution of art would begin at the most elemental level, the point of production, the artwork. Seeing the artwork in such a context forces scrutiny of its conventions and historical baggage, such as painting and sculpture itself as an activity.
И таким образом рассматриваем предмет искусства в подобном контексте. Это рассмотрение вызывало, подвергало сомнению какие-то нормы или состоявшиеся представления об искусстве и историческом наследии, такие как живопись или скульптура сами по себе и в качестве процесса.
First inside the frame and then outside. One goal at the time of work like the second investigation was to question the institutional forms of art. If the work that preceded this confronted the institutional form of authority in traditional art, this work pressed the point out of the gallery and the museum into the world using public medium. The relevance of this to the question of intention is in what it implies. The disappearance, perhaps with finality, of the threshold between what had been the art object, that which is now simply art, and the intentions of its maker. Indeed, there can no longer really be a separation between the work and the intention of the artist. The work of art, in this case, is manifested intention. Ultimately, we might want to ask, of course, if intention is the text itself, or the production of the screen upon which the greater social text appears. Even if the fragments of overlaps are of many projections, race, creed, gender. Relatively recently, I've corresponded with an art historian who wrote a master's thesis on my Poseidon work, a large installation I did for Documenta 9 in Kassel, Germany. In one letter discussing artistic intention, she writes, and I quote, "The relativizing position of the art historian says, even if we can know what the artist intended, it isn't that important. What is important is the work of art and how it generates meaning." I don't doubt her assessment, but reading her letter, I felt again the distance between the art historian's approach and my own. What this suggests is that the art historical process is a kind of conspiracy, even if unwittingly so, to politically disenfranchise my activity as an artist.
И что это подразумевает, так это то, что
if my intention is denied at its inception, then my responsibility for the meaning I generate in the world as an artist is also nullified. The artist becomes just another producer of goods for the market, where the work finds its meaning. This, it seems to me, was exactly where we came into the picture in the 1960s, when Noland Olitsky et al. Would never need to leave their studio, just paint them and ship them out, and let Clement Greenberg and his minions provide the meaning. For them, art and politics were separate, and their practice reflected that. What is seldom discussed is how one looked at those paintings and saw the theory. I think this greatly explains why, for so many now, such work is held in the low esteem it is. Perhaps I should also make clear that I am not suggesting that artists are the only ones capable of discussing works of art. On the contrary, art historians and critics play an important role in the struggle of the works coming to meaning in the world. But that is the point. They represent the world. That is why a defining part of the creative process depends on the artist to assert their intentions in that struggle. One of the greatest lessons defending the primacy of the intention of the artist and the increasing importance of writing by artists on their work is this period of the 60s. One example would be Ad Reinhardt. Ad Reinhardt painted black paintings, but anyone who knew him, knew how he thought about art, would tell you that he was more than just a producer of paintings. He was a producer of meaning. It is this total activity as an artist which ultimately provided those paintings with a cultural life as it preserved Reinhardt's reasons for making them. Which you see when you look at those paintings. By his ceaseless participation in panel discussions, his lectures, the texts like Rules for a New Academy, his teaching, and the cartoons, he made it very difficult for others to co-opt his work for their purposes and for their meanings. Indeed, his work had to resist a critical atmosphere associated with Clement Greenberg, in which work that was outside of a certain orthodoxy was either made to fit or dismissed. The limits of Clement Greenberg's vision, however, are probably witnessed with no greater clarity than in his statement on Ad Reinhardt that he, quote, has a genuine, if small, gift for color, but none at all for design or placing. Our more recent experience of the return to painting in the 80s reminds us again of the potential bankruptcy of a form of art that relies on its meaning to be provided by others than its makers.